welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, go to pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all you non-members out there, sign up for our free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the Apple Store and Google Play. In today's podcast, we feature an episode from Paint Ed with Torlando.
Welcome to Paint Ed. My name is Torlando. I am your host. I'm so glad to be with you guys today. I just love the painting industry. You know that I do. Last night, I had a really great chance to do a webinar with the PCA with Sydney and was helping some contractors live going through a little bit of a marketing plan. It was a lot of fun and had a really heartfelt response on the meaning of this show to people, and it felt really good. So I just want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in every week with all of our shows. You know, you've got Zach Kenny, you got Nick Slavic, you've got Noah Cantor and Chris Moore, all of us producing content for your listening ears to keep you busy through the workday and to keep you thinking about the business, how to grow your business, how to do these things. So grateful to our listeners. A couple of announcements before we begin. Keep in mind that we have Expo coming up in March. Please go and register for that. I want to see you guys. I am ready. We didn't get to have the Expo at the beginning of this year, 2021. I am ready to see you guys face to face. I'm ready to go to those evening events and the after parties and all the fun stuff that we do. And I'm excited to keep up our learning journey. So go to PCA Paint Ed and check out the dates on that for the Expo. Today, I've got a really great guest on the docket. You know that if you've been listening, you know that I have been just going back to the hiring issue over and over and over again, because it's just not letting up. 10.4 million jobs are just vacant. I know you're struggling to find people. It's difficult. It's hard. And I want to help you find solutions to this. Okay. So I'm really drilling into this. And so I'm bringing on a guy named Jason Mutzfeld. He's with C3 Indy. They're a coaching program, and this is unique. They offer coaching services to people who are looking for jobs, not the other way around. So what I find so unique about this is that I want to get into the mind of the job seeker. I want to know what it's going to take for somebody who has never been in the paint trade to get interested, to find it attractive, to feel like it's going to serve them in their lives enough to be able to say, yes, I want to work for you. Cause here's the deal. I saw on Facebook the other day, somebody posted that they posted a picture of a McDonald's. I don't know where this was, but they were ready to offer $21 an hour to work at McDonald's. Okay. That means that they are not impressed by your $12.50 an hour and you learn a trade. They're not impressed by that. Okay. They can make twice as much at McDonald's. And we need to think about what it takes to recruit better people. And the theme of the show today is to create a coaching culture. So I am so excited to bring on Jason. Let me go ahead and bring him out right now. Hey, what's up, Jason? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Torlando. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So did I explain that right? Did I explain what you at C3 Indy do?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your company.
Yeah. Circle City Coaching. We focus on two areas. We focus on the individual. That is the individual looking for a job. We train them through resume writing, career coaching, interview coaching, salary negotiation, primarily in the professional sphere. And we've been helping people like that for years. Yep. We also we look at it from the employer side as well. And that's really, it's a two-part equation. You have to look at it, not just the individual is looking for a job. Everyone's looking for a job. Employers are always looking for somebody. And we tend to want to treat that as a commodity transaction. It is time for money. Time for money. It's a bad plan. It's short-sighted. It's not sustainable. Mm. What we teach our clients, both on the corporate side and the individual side at Circle City Coaching, is look, you don't want to just race to the bottom. Who can do this the cheapest, or how little work can you do for the most amount of money? Mm-hmm. Because that's just economically not sustainable. We want you to focus on bring your whole self to work is what some people say. We like to say bring your better self to work. We want you to really feel like you're getting a return on investment for your time and your effort that you're putting in. And your employer, as an employer, you want that too. If you're going to invest time and effort into your employees, you don't want to think of them as a cost center. You want to think of it as an investment. And when we change that script and we start thinking in terms of this is an investment, I'm investing my time, and it's more than just pay me. It's have some purpose, some meaning, and some results to what I'm doing. I want to see the end result.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I remember when I was a little bit early in my contracting business, and I had a team, I had a good team, I had a couple crews running. And I remember talking to one of my painters, and I said, you know, I think that the time is not too far away where the shift in my focus is going to be less on trying to find work, and I'm going to have to spend most of my time trying to find workers. Yep. And that happened, and it became very clear that I needed to understand a lot better what they were in it. I mean, everybody's tuned to WWIFM, what's in it for me radio.
I love that example. I use that all the time.
Right. And
everyone's favorite channel.
It is, right. And I just remember thinking, oh gosh, the way that I'm interviewing, the way that I'm writing these job descriptions, it's all tailored to what I need as an employer, mm-hmm. but I'm not quite thinking about what they might want as an employee. And I think when I made that shift, I immediately started attracting better people. So how do I don't know that I could tell people how to replicate that shift in mindset. How would you tell employers that they need to be thinking about the needs of the person on the other side of the interviewing desk?
Gotcha. It's really a matter of don't think of coaching as some sort of life coaching. I know I'm a born and bred Midwesterner with just enough East Coast to make me interesting. And when I hear coaching, and especially life coaching or some of the fluffy stuff, I tend to shy away from that. We want to think as business people and entrepreneurs, we want to think, you know, bottom line, brass tacks, you know, this is, you know, okay. And that's all well and good.
Yeah.
But we have to understand that that's short-sighted profit. We need to focus on a longer-term profit. And who's taking care of our customers? Our customers are the whole reason we're in business. Who's taking care of them? We're not taking care of them necessarily. It's our employees and our contractors and all that. They're the ones taking care of them.
Right.
So it's our job to let them, to empower them, to make them accountable, to hold them accountable. And we do that, but we need to make sure to let them be the ones who are taking care of our customers. We have to take a step back and change our mindset. And it really is about a mindset. And that's the reason coaching is such a great word. Because when we think of coaching, we don't think about the head football coach going out there and throwing passes tackling players. We think about the coach getting the team in a huddle and saying, look, fellas, look, guys, you know, this is what we're going to do, you know, and not to be gender specific there, but. For football, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
WNBA, you know, WNBA coach is going to bring, all right, listen, team, we're going to get together and we're going to do what we need to do. And you let them do it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, coaching is a mindset change. You're changing your attitude from I am the employer and I am in command and I control you and I will tell you what to do and you will do what you're told. You have to have some of that. Mm-hmm, you can't just let everyone go crazy.
Yeah, situationally, for sure.
Exactly. But you have to really ask them and find out which individual player. We take a strengths focus here at Circle City Coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about your, we use the Gallup-Clifton strengths assessment. I mean, Peter Drucker talked about strengths, you know, 100 years ago almost. You know, yeah. He was talking about strengths. Focus on what you're good at and get good at it. If you have somebody who is a good point guard, make sure that they're the point guard. Make sure that's what they're doing. You have to ask, you have to listen, and then you have to guide. And that's those are the three points of coaching. And that's all coaching boils down to.
Yeah.
Okay, let's find out about you. What are you? And when I'm hiring you, we always ask, why do you want to work here? And that's the central question of any sort of employment. Yeah. You know, they talk at length about engagement. Engagement is just, do you give a darn?
Yeah.
You really want to be here?
Yeah, and right.
So we ask that question, why do you want to work here? If you're just working here for the money, I need a job, you're going to have a different sort of motivation. And that's a very financial motivation. But if you find out, well, you know, I really want to care about what I'm doing. You know, I want to have fun at work. You know, that is, you know, humor makes a big difference in the workplace. If you're having fun, and this isn't all jokes and comedy. I mean, work is tough. Work sucks. It's called work for a reason. We get paid for it because we wouldn't do it voluntarily. But asking, you know, okay, who are you as a person? Empathizing and understanding their people too. It's really a people-centric focus that we have to take. We ask about them. And then we listen. We actually open up our ears. We don't just hear what they're having to say. Okay, why do you work here? Well, I want to support my family. You know, I have two kids to feed. And, you know, it's vitally important that, that I get good hours, and I need time off to go to my kids' baseball game.
Yeah.
Okay. That's that. You listen to that and you understand that and you put that person in context. You don't necessarily have to treat them any differently, but you have to listen to what their needs are. And then you will negotiate, you will guide, you will, you know, inspire, you will motivate, but you also have to understand their motivation comes from within. There's a reason they've come to work every day. There's a reason they don't come to work every day.
Yeah.
The reason they don't come to work today is usually because they don't care.
Yeah.
But if they care, those people you got to hold on to, because they're going to take care of your customers. They're going to drive your company forward.
Yeah. So let's go back to this ask part and let's kind of dive in and dissect this a little bit. Yeah. So there's a great book by John Maxwell called, I believe it's Great Leaders Ask Good Questions. A really phenomenal book. Just to, you know, for my listeners, if you're looking for a new book, Great Leaders Ask Good Questions. Yeah. Great book. What is the role? What does asking questions do to an individual that helps them truly connect with your company?
Exactly. Well, back to what's in it for me, WIIFM. You know, people want to be they want to talk about themselves, and we always say, "Oh, I don't want to brag about myself," but we do want to make a connection, and asking questions builds that connection. And it's vitally important not to just ask why questions, because why questions will put us on the defensive. You know, why did you do that? Well, wait a minute. Ask a what question. Well, what drove you to do what inspired you to do that? Or why did, you know, what did you do? You know, asking those what questions are probative questions. They activate the imagination. You know, Simon Sinek always talking about start with why. I always say start with what. Ask a what question. Find out about the person beyond their, you know, their mission or their purpose or their goal. And these lofty terms that we talk about. At the end of the day, we're also all struggling to survive. So we have a more basic need. It's an individual need. It's a personal need. And that's where the what question comes in. It goes deeper than a why question. A why question, you don't necessarily have to have a why.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hungry.
Well, depending on how it's asked, it's really asking for a justification.
Yes, exactly.
And we might not want a justification because a justification is usually less truthful.
Exactly.
It's not a flat out lie, but there's not always a reason, you know, the I think the underlying motivation of what makes people tick, you know, comes down to a few things. Like you said, they want to survive, but once they are beyond that survival aspect, I think that they want to be connected to something. I think they want to gain mastery. I think they want autonomy over their lives. Yep. And, you know, to your point, I think that when you are asking really good questions, deep questions that pull out the question. It's almost, you know, the question behind the question or the answer behind the answer. When you're able to pull those things out, you get these identity connections. which I think are really, really critical to building a good culture. Yep. Because if that person can't see themselves in the culture of your company, then they're not going to fit.
Yep.
Conversely, if they have the good culture, they will learn the skills necessary. They will adapt and they'll follow the processes. They'll follow the plan that you lay out, and they'll do it happily and warmly and with excitement, because they want to be connected to the culture. And I think if you aren't pulling out who they are through the questions, if you're not getting to know them and all you're doing is just talking about your company, you're not getting them to open up, then they're not going to know that you understand who they are. You're not going to actually understand who they are. And I think that sets you up for a bad hire.
Bingo. That is exactly on point. I mean, culture eats strategy for breakfast. I mean, you can come up with the best metrics and you can hit all your goals, blah, 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 blah. But if your culture sucks, you're not going to go anywhere. I mean, right. It is truly the engine, because at the end of the day, we're all people. We're all human beings. We have different, as you mentioned, it's self-determination theory, which Daniel Pink in his book Drive, that's another good book. Autonomy, mastery, and purpose. You know, I learned that before I learned self-determination theory. So I always use his shortcuts. But yeah, there are reasons we motivate ourselves. We get out of bed every morning because we have a motivation. Mm-hmm. And understanding a person's strengths, their values, their principles, their ethics, getting to know that person creates a sense of communication, connection, and ultimately that leads to trust. And that trust is the foundation of psychological safety. And there's a lot written on psychological safety now. People who are feeling they can trust their boss, they can trust their manager, they can trust their employer, not to stick them in the back. Mm-hmm. They feel that sense of trust. They'll have more of a sense of mastery, autonomy, purpose. They'll have more sense of that. They will do better. And especially when you're playing them to their strengths, we love to do what we're good at. That's why we're good at it, because we got really good at it because we spent more time at it. Yeah. Stuff we don't like to do. I don't like to deal with numbers, so I personally don't like to do bookkeeping. I like to have somebody else do that. You know, when it comes to words, I love to massage a word or two, put them together and make, you know, funny phrases and things like that. I'm going to work with, my strength is in words, not in numbers. And knowing that as an employer is critical, because you have to know where your team is good and you have to find out where your gaps are. Coaching is ultimately about gaps and any sort of problem, solving a gap and closing that gap. So you don't have that problem.
Yeah. I think that word trust is such a critical factor here. And I'm going to relate it back to, you know, my football days. The second school that I played, I went to a bunch of high schools and I went to a school that had a long tradition of winning. That I got there and I remember seeing the guy who was the varsity player in my position. And he was in the attendance office and they were like, yeah, here's Torlando. He plays football too. And this kid just he leans back. He's got the state ring. And he's like, well, what position do you know? Yeah. And there's just this, you know, excellent pride in the school and in the spirit of the football team and everything. Mm-hmm. And the year that I got to varsity, our legendary coach retired. And we brought in a new coach, and it was a new coaching system, and nobody trusted the guy. Nobody could get behind him. Yeah. And our team, our tradition winning team, it freaking fell apart. We had a horrible season and we just couldn't align behind him. There were just too many people trying to do their own thing, and we couldn't work together as a team. It completely blew up. And I think trust is so important. The other point that you brought up that I think is so valuable is this idea of finding motivated people. My uncle is he's retired now, but he's an executive at a pretty, you know, major corporation. And I in the summers I would go vacation. I always go vacation with him and do fun stuff. And I always ask him, I always pick his brain about things like leadership and stuff like that. And I said, Uncle Mike, how do I motivate my employees? And he said, you are asking the wrong question.
Yeah.
I said, okay, what do you mean? He said, say, I asked that same question. I've got these guys, I want them to do good work. How do I motivate them? He said, and his boss told him, if you aren't finding people who are already motivated, you're doing it wrong. Okay. Your question needs to be, how do I find motivated people? You shouldn't have to show up every day and motivate your guys into working. You need to find people who are ready to work today.
Yep.
So along those lines, you know, we've got building trust. And I think asking questions builds the trust. But how do we ask those questions? What questions can we ask to figure out if we've got a person who's going to be motivated to learn the job and do the work?
Well, I think ultimately what that can come down to is looking at their history. And when I coach a person on their career, I look at their career cycle. I say, what can you do? That's important. I mean, you know, if you have the skills, that's money in, to a certain degree, but also what have you done? What's their accomplishments? So asking those questions and then again, listening, it is about watching how they work, because I don't care what you say, what you do speaks volume is 10 times louder than what you say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is all about integrity, and their work ethic of a person will shine through, and their level of commitment will shine through regardless of say, yeah, I'm here to work. But if they're gold bricking all day, that's not gonna cut it. I mean, you're gonna see that, and that involves, and as they say, it takes a village, it takes a community of your, you know, finding out, listening to all your people, finding out what they think of other people. There's some talk about 360 reviews in corporate America. I'm not necessarily a fan, but just understanding a person's network, because at the end of the day, you want to not just hire people who are motivated. You're going to hire their network, because everyone's a network. Human beings can't do anything without another human being. I mean, unless you're living on a desert island, you're connected with other people. You can't get a toaster. You can't build a toaster from scratch. If you want to buy a toaster, you have to make money. You have to, you know, trust the factory is built. It has a supply chain, has to deliver it to you. It takes a network, a web of people. Your employees are going to be your best asset to find other employees. Because you want them to hire, you want to find, hey, I worked with this guy two companies ago and he's fantastic. Or, hey, you know, this lady, she's fantastic. She's the best at what she does. We need to bring her in. You know, they will offer that. They will gladly say, and because they're talking about you, much like your customers do. They are saying, look, I love working here. This is fantastic. My boss listens to me. I feel appreciated. I feel valued, you know, I'm making $21 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you still got to pay the right wage, but
yeah, you know, at least match McDonald's out here.
Exactly. You know, but you know, nobody's going to go to work McDonald's for $2 more an hour. And like, well, I could get treated like crap for $2 an hour more, or I could be treated like an actual human being for $19 an hour. You know, there's something about that too. I mean, the cost, the return on investment for your effort has got to be, you feel heard, you feel validated, and that's asking and listening and guiding. I mean, you want to be, you make that personal connection.
So how do I become a better listener? Because if I'm the kind of person that, you know, I've just been in the position my whole life to tell people what to do. I've been a boss my whole life. I'm captain of the football team. I've always been barking out orders. Mm-hmm. How do I turn into a better listener?
It is a habit. You've ever heard the phrase, listen to actually hear what's being said. Don't just hear what's being said, but listen. You are here to listen. You know, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason, because you're supposed to listen twice as much as you talk. And we sometimes hear things and then we immediately want to respond, or we want to jump in. We want to interrupt. Don't do that. It is a nasty habit. It's no different than when you were a child, you probably picked your nose in public. Yeah. As an adult, you don't pick your nose in public. Well, maybe you do.
Trying to get my kids to figure that out.
Yeah, it is a habit. It is a habit to just, you know, shove the finger up there and start picking. Don't do it. You're going to... That's probably the grossest analogy I've ever used, but stick with me here. You will be conscious of knowing that, look, I have to listen to what's being said. I want to listen to that person. Shut yourself down. You know, whatever you have to do, whether it's bite the inside of your lip or bite the inside of your cheek, or just cross your hands. Do something to stop yourself from wanting to respond and actually actively listen. When you're in class, we all took the class where we're like, oh, what's going on? I don't care. When you're not listening, it shows you don't care. And if you don't care, don't expect your people to care. You can't argue it. So if you get people to engage, to care, listen to them. And it's just a matter of, we all know how to listen. It's just a matter of making it something that we consciously do.
Yeah. I think part of listening for me is kind of setting aside or even throwing away predetermined outcomes, right? They're because if I'm going into a meeting, if I'm going into a work meeting, and I have this thing that I want to accomplish and I want to get people there, I feel like I'm always more likely to try to command the conversation because I want to make sure that I have the control over where we end up by the end of the meeting. But the times that I am at my best in terms of listening is where I go in and I kind of empty myself. I had a college professor. He gave me this, he told me this parable. He said, there's a young man who was seeking wisdom. And he found a wise man. And when he went to the wise man, he said, "Master, please teach me. I want to learn from you." And the wise man motioned over a servant to pour him some tea. And as he started pouring, the tea started overflowing. The cup was overflowing. Finally, the young man said, "Master, your cup it's running over. It's overflowing. You're spilling." And he said, "I cannot fill a cup that is already full. You have to empty yourself first." Mm-hmm. Right?
That's so true.
Even for leaders, I think that to get the most out of your team, I think you do have to go into a meeting, or when you're bringing in a new person, I think there is an element of empty yourself a little bit and be open to what this person can do to provide value to your company so that they can have a mark on it. And if they have their own mark on it, they're going to take more ownership over it.
Yes. Yeah. There's something to that being beyond your ego. I mean, because there's something that really boosts the ego about being the boss. You know, I am the person in charge. I am, you know, everyone's going to listen to me. I'm stellar. I'm, you know, you got to talk about it at parties that you're the head cheese. Well, yeah, but there's a term, servant leadership. I'm not a fan of it, but the concept is valid, because if you're leading, you don't lead by telling people what to do. You know, you get them to follow you, or more importantly, you bring them along. You're in the middle of the pack. That's the best way to lead, is shoulder to shoulder. Because one of the things that changed me as an employee back when I was is seeing my manager not as person up here, but as a peer. Mm-hmm. You know, a manager is trying to do their job. And as a manager, that's really, you don't want to think of yourself as being above. You want to think of yourself as, you protect your people. You are protecting your people from all the insane customers, the insane fellow managers, you know, just the insanity, the general organizational stupidity and BS that we all have to deal with from day to day. It's there. It's part of the organizational structure. It's just, we're human beings. It happens.
Yeah.
You know, your job is to protect your people and to come alongside them. And you're right. Expectations is the right word, because we have certain expectations, but expectations at the end of the day, if you're not managing them properly, if you're high expectations could cause a problem, because nobody ever rises to the level of their expectations. They always fall to the level of their training. So be careful how you're training your people. I mean, train them up to be, you know, the best they can be, more importantly, be better than they can, you know, than just a little bit better each day.
You know, that point of, you know, the boss just coming in and having that power, I don't think business owners, presidents, CEOs, I don't think that they understand truly how much power they have over their employees. I think they're completely blind to it. I was blind to it. I had no clue, because I would go in and I would say, okay, we're going to do this, this, and this, and we're going to try this thing. And I remember hiring, I hired a new marketing manager at my company, and she was just sharp as a tack, had an MBA, you know, just like the real deal. And I come in and I start giving her a plan of action, and she executed it fine, but the results were abysmal. And I thought, shoot, why isn't this working? And she kind of, you know, she kind of sheepishly, you know, at first had some thoughts, and then I was like, okay, hold on. You're trying to dissect this medium that I told everybody to do. If I hadn't given you a plan of action, if I had just said, what would you do to get our marketing jumping? What would you have done? She said, well, if this was a laboratory and I was doing things the way that I was trained, I would start here. And it was completely different than where I had started. And I just said, you know what? Why don't you go do that? Why don't you go execute on that?
Yeah.
And she was happier. The work was better. The results were better, right?
Mm-hmm. The power of listening. Exactly. You know, Scott, I just blanked on his name, the astronauts at NASA, they talk about none of us is as dumb as all of us. So none of us is as dumb as all of us, which doesn't sort of strike you between the eyes. But the principle was that when the Challenger, I'm old enough to remember the Challenger incident, and they knew that those O-rings were going to fail at some point, and but they went ahead and did it anyway because people were afraid to speak up, and because of that, people died. I mean, very rarely in our jobs do people die because we failed to speak up. But in that case, NASA realized, well, wait a minute, we can't. What do you mean you could have stopped this?
Mm-hmm.
This was a massive mess up on astronomical layer.
Yeah.
What they did was they instituted a plan where, look, if something is wrong, you say something, and that goes double for it. Well, wait a minute, boss, have you ever considered this? Mm-hmm. You know, and be willing to listen to your people. I mean, we tend to take that command and control. We've been indoctrinated in that from childhood. You know, look at our educational system. It is the teacher at the front, and you know, the sage on the stage, as they teach us in college. This is the sage on the stage. Well, education is flipped, and it's become more the guide on the side is now the metaphor for a teacher. And it's taking time for the workplace to catch up to that.
Yeah.
But truly, it is about mining your people, because you have your people are your strongest asset, and you have to acknowledge that. And you're not just going to ignore them. I mean, ignoring them is leaving an asset on the table. You're leaving money on the table by not probing your people for input. Now, you shouldn't make it a consensus. And, you know, there's some people who don't like consensus. You know, they still want to have that control, and that's okay. I mean, everyone's leadership style is different. I'm not saying you have to change, but I am saying you should at least entertain the option.
Yeah.
That other people might have an opinion that can help you, and you need to reduce your ego, you know, get your ego out of it and understand this is about moving the mission forward. You know, this is about protecting the company, you know, keeping the company moving forward, keeping your organizational objectives going. This isn't about you as the boss. It isn't about your employees. It's about the mission.
Yeah. So how do we then take this last piece of guiding people to the mission? What are the basic principles of what we need to know in terms of being the best possible guide to our crew?
Well, I think it comes back to setting your expectations properly. And again, getting out of your own way, getting out of your ego. I mean, we tend to think of ego in terms of, well, I'm very proud of who I am, and in a sense of pride and ego. And that is human nature. But we have to manage our egos. We can't think that we're the smartest person in the room. I think it was Michael Dell who said, if you're the smartest person in a room, find a new room.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing more humbling than being in a room of people who are smarter and understand the problem better than you do. I bought a microwave during the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic. And there was this company I bought it from. It took probably 6 to 7 months for this microwave to be delivered and installed, all because nobody really knew what was going on in the organization. They were struggling to cope with everything that went on in 2020.
Yeah. Supply and workers and all
that. But it was just a people problem. I could not get anyone that could solve. There were people telling people who wanted to help me, but they just couldn't. You know, getting out of people's way and letting them do their job is what we want to do as managers and leaders and owners. So guiding them is about finding out that situational knowledge that they have because they're on the front lines. You know, your customer experience is driven by your employee experience. So if your employees are disengaged, they don't care, they're just answering the phones, you know, there's a disconnect there. If you want to truly serve your customers and move your mission forward, you want to engage those people on the front lines. You know, to use a military metaphor, you don't want to just push pieces. Soldiers are not just pushed around on the board. They have situational intelligence you don't have as a general. You know,
right.
If you're sending people out to die, you know, you need to make sure that they know what's going on. They have boots on the ground. They are aware of the situation. You're not necessarily aware of that. You only have a piece of the puzzle. It's a very big puzzle. We all know a little bit.
Yeah.
And so humbling yourself to that. I mean, being confident in your decisions, always be confident, but also be humble. And humility is a tough, tough sell in corporate America and business. It just is because we're taught, I gotta be, you know, El Cadillo, the tough guy, you know, I gotta be macho. No.
Yeah, you don't need all the answers.
Yeah, you don't need to know exactly. You don't need to know it all. You just have to be willing to say, I don't know, but I'll find out. It's not usually my job, but I'll find somebody who can help you. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be willing to put your ego aside and get the job done.
Yeah. I think a big portion of being a good guide is to be empathetic and to be trusting, but also to carry your authority. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of a situation where, you know, I would need to guide an employee. The first thing that I would want to know is what have they tried? Mm-hmm. Because if they've tried a few things and, you know, they weren't getting the results, then I would at least know not to give them the advice to do the thing that they already tried, which is so annoying as an employee. Mm-hmm. Well, did you do this? Yeah, I did. And it didn't work. Right. Like that's so annoying. So I think I would first, you know, going back to what you said, ask, I would probably ask what they've already done. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing that I would do is I would ask them what they think that they're going to try next. Because if they can just start to use their critical thinking skills and come up with some ideas, they're going to throw out something at me that may be a better idea than the one that I had. But it's also going to flex those muscles for them to foster that independence. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be careful as a boss, because if you get people who are too dependent on you for coming up with solutions, they're going to keep calling you for simpler and simpler things. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to move on and focus on the things that are important to you because they are constantly asking you how to do their job. Mm-hmm. And after a while, when they know that you start trusting their decision-making, they're going to just make those decisions and start solving those problems on their own. But you do need to be there. I don't think you can't get annoyed when they come to you with questions. You have to be empathetic. You have to put yourself in their shoes and you have to ask, you know, what have you tried? And then if it's a good idea, say, go for it. And if it's a bad idea, you highlight the things that they're not seeing. You mm-hmm. fill in the gaps and say, you know, that's not a bad idea. However, you know, when you do that, this is what might happen. And you keep working and working towards a solution that is ultimately the best combination of both of your guys' thinking.
Exactly. You, as a leader, you have that perspective. You have more of a 40,000 foot view. You have that strategic perspective as opposed to the tactical, you know, perspective, which is what your frontline workers face with every day, because they're inundated with all sorts of requests and problems. And they're dealing with the best they can. And you do not want to have an environment that it does not have enough trust and safety that they can make some mistakes.
Right.
Because the whole three strikes and you're out, blah, 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 you know, better to fix a problem with an employee that they do consistently than it is to just fire them and let them go. You know, I always say, hold on to a person as, you know, long enough to see if you can fix the problem. And hopefully it'll be a mutual separation. Because firing people is never fun.
And it's expensive.
Yeah, it is definitely very expensive.
Yeah.
because you have to replace them.
You have to replace them. You got to catch somebody up to speed. And and in the painting industry, I mean, it can take 3 months to a year for somebody to fully be caught up to speed and be, you know, be highly profitable. I mean, it takes training. I mean, this is a real craft, and that takes practice. So, okay. So if we as leaders adopt this coaching model of constantly asking, pulling out those questions, listening to our people, and providing guidance. And what I'm hearing is almost providing guidance in a way where they are taking control of their own growth as an individual. You're just the coach on the sideline that's helping them run the play, but you're giving them that feedback and you're allowing them to get creative. If we do this all right, what does our business look like?
It looks like a more proactive strategy, honestly. That's what I would take away from that, because you are not just reacting to what's going on in the situation. Well, it's hard to hire people and they're never skilled, blah, 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 blah. Make a plan. Have a strategy. I mean, you have a strategy for growing your business. That strategy needs to include people. It's just that simple. Because learning is fundamental to everything humans do. We had to learn how to walk. We had to learn how to talk. We had to learn all sorts of things as a child. And as we grew up, we learned how to drive a car. We learned how to vote. We learned how to balance a checkbook or bank account. We learned all that stuff. We had to learn. And often we learned it by screwing it up.
Yeah.
When you have a toddler or a child that's just learning to stand up, they do the whole wobble thing and they fall down on their butt. They fall down on their face. They fall down a lot. If they don't fall down, they're never going to learn to walk. Mm-hmm. And screwing something up, you know, is sometimes the best way to learn stuff. So being patient is important. You know, being patient and ultimately that patience is a proactive structure. You are looking down the road and saying, look, I know this isn't going to be perfect. I don't expect it to be perfect. I don't expect my people to know everything or to come out of the gate fully formed. Mm-hmm. You know, you be proactive, because that proactivity is going to make it so that you can eventually you'll get the culture to the point where employees start training each other. They start developing each other. They start to learn to trust each other, not just your boss, because this isn't a one-to-one relationship. Sometimes we tend to think of it as the supervisors up here and each employee is under them. It's all but one big mesh. And employees will start training employees, and ultimately they'll train your customers. You know, they'll give your customers great advice.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we painted the inside of our house recently, you know, we were told, well, you know, we actually have a stock of this paint that's identical to it, and we actually need to move it. So I'm going to talk to my boss and see if, and by God, it's the same color paint. Mm-hmm. And it was just a different brand, Valspar versus something else. Pittsburgh paint. And they wouldn't, in a non-safe environment, they're not going to ever offer that to a customer. Mm-hmm. They're just going to go, I'm just doing my job. I'm just here to do my job. And there's a lot of people who do want to, I just want to show up and do my job, but they're cogs in a machine and a widget. And ultimately that's going to lead to burnout. That's going to lead to people quitting, always trying to chase that rainbow. Mm. You know, better to grow where you're planted help your people grow. And by helping them grow, they're going to help you grow. So, and they're going to help each other grow, because that's just how it is. This isn't business profit 101. This is brain science. This is just how human beings work.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. All right, Jason, Circle City, Indiana. Tell us where to go to find out more about you.
It is c3indy.com. That is the letter C, number 3indy.com. That's our website. You can also find us on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I'm happy. I'm out there. Just find us on LinkedIn. Connect with my partner, Michelle Merritt. We have a lot of content that we're always putting out for job seekers. And, you know, as the training guy, you know, we're putting out more and more about corporate culture and creating that coaching culture. Reach out to us on LinkedIn or our website. We're happy to talk to people.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason, so much. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
All right, there we have it, folks. Jason Mutzfeld, C3ND.com. What a great conversation. It reminded me so much of the introduction in my book where I talk about this plane crash that happened in the 70s. It was one of the most devastating plane crashes that ever happened. Two Boeing 747s crashed into each other and everybody died. It was travesty. And they created this system, both NASA and, you know, from the story that he talked about with the Challenger and NASA and the air traffic control, they created a system to when you're working with your team, understanding that the people who are the boots on the ground, they're closest to the service, they're closest to the thing, and they have the best eyes. And so, you know, the idea is that you you alert the captain. When the captain gets alerted, you tell him what the problem is. And then when you tell him the problem, you say, this is the solution that I propose. And then you get permission to proceed with the solution. You want to get your people in that mode of presenting the problem, coming up with a solution, getting permission to go and proceed with the solution. And when you gain that trust, eventually they just go and they do. And it's a beautiful thing. So thank you so much to Jason. By the way, if you want to check out my book, go to Amazon.com and type in Torlando Hakes. The book is called Sprint. It's a fun one. I'd appreciate you guys checking that out. In terms of PCA, content like this, okay, is available on PCA Overdrive. Over 400 hours of bonus content, exclusive content for paint contractors. It's $5.99 a month. For non-members, it's free with your membership in the PCA. So if you're interested in that, go to pcapainted.com. That's my show for today, folks. I appreciate your listens. I appreciate talking and engaging in the Paint Ed Facebook group. So many smart people, so many high quality craftsmen in there. If you're not in that group, it is the place to be. Go join, participate. There's so much knowledge about paint failure and using the right products and but then also business stuff and hiring stuff and so many great things, all available. Facebook, the Paint Ed group. I'm Torlando, and this has been Paint Ed.
Paint Ed podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and is made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.